on weeknights from 6
on 2FM. Big thanks to Two Johnnies. It's Friday, the 10th of May, and you're listening to Game On. Well, over the next hour, Alan Cawley, Fergal Brennan, Jane Mangan, Brendan Devaney and Noel Larkin will preview the sporting weekend ahead. Plus, we've got our eye on the Irish athletes in the Diamond League action in Doha. And John Kenny is at the T20 cricket in Clontarf. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at Game On 2FM. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. Alan Cawley is with me in studio. How are you, Al?
I'm great, Marie. If you can't be great on an evening like that, Marie, there's something wrong with
that
you.
That is an absolute fact. There's so much going on. And the sunshine, it just brings out the best in everybody. We're going to be going to John Kenny in Clontarf in just a minute. But Alan, last night, was it? Will we have the final that we will be as good as a Champions League final with Atalanta and Bayer Leverkusen in Dublin?
I'm not sure if it'll be as good as that, but finals, I suppose, just on their own, anywhere, Marie, can throw up some brilliant matches. And I think, to be fair to this Bayer Leverkusen team, and considering what Atalanta did to Liverpool, it sets it up nicely for an exciting game. Leverkusen are just phenomenal to watch. Like, when you think of last night, that obviously they're two down, going for this unbelievable record of unbeaten in 49 games. I think they were sitting on 48 last night, which was the equal in the record. That was the break at the end of 49th. And considering they were two down, what amazed me, though, Marie, and it just, I suppose, shows the mindset and the attitude and the approach from Xabi Alonso, even when they got they got their first goal, which made it 3-2 on aggregate, which meant that they were going through to the final regardless. And normally you'd see teams like that trying to manage the game and bring the ball into the corner and think, oh, we'll just settle for that, and obviously we're into the final and that's the most important thing. They just never stopped going forward and trying to score the equaliser. And it was academic, really, in terms of the match, the goal that they equalised, because that made it 4-2. But it wasn't academic in terms of the record and breaking that record. And they've done it so many times over recent weeks, scoring late goals. It's absolutely phenomenal. And when you watch them, you just see the job that he's done, and you see why Xabi Alonso is held in such high regard and linked with Liverpool and was their number one target. And he will eventually, if it's not this year, it'll be next year, the year after, but he'll be managing Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Liverpool, whoever the case may be.
I'd say whoever he wants now, whoever he wants. The time comes.
I heard last night, actually, funny enough, that they're looking Real Madrid to, once Ancelotti leaves, that he'll replace Ancelotti.
Yeah,
and when you think of what they're building at the moment, Real Madrid, it's phenomenal.
It's actually frightening. Okay, we'll park that. We'll be having a football chat in a while. Fergal Brennan is going to join us as well. We're going to turn our attention to cricket now, and we're going to go and join John Kenny in very sunny Clontarf. He is watching Ireland in action against Pakistan. John, how are you? How is the cricket going?
It's going well in Ireland's favour at the moment. Chasing the 183 for victory, Ireland are currently on 137 for three. That's at the end of 15 overs, so 5 overs to go. Andy Balbirnie's having a great knock for Ireland. The former Irish white ball captain's on 59. A quick fire 22 from George Stockrell, adding to Harry Tector's 36, has put Ireland in a very good position. Put into bat, Pakistan made 182 for six off their 20 overs. A rapid finish to their innings. At one stage, the visitors were 150 for six in the 18th over before Iftikhar Ahmed blasted 37 off just 15 deliveries to take Pakistan past that 180. Ireland found the pace attack of Pakistan difficult to put away in reply, so they lost early wickets of Paul Sterling and Lorcan Tucker. But that 77 run partnership between Balbirnie and Harry Tector was just what they needed to get the impetus going in the Irish reply. They're 137 for three. We're just starting the 16th over with Balbirnie on 59, Dockerill on 23. A lot depends on these two. Can they take Ireland over the line? The game will be over before you come off the air, so hopefully we go back to you soon with good news from the Irish front.
John, is everybody buzzing there with the weather?
Fantastic, it really is. And it's the first day of summer, and you know, in fairness to Ireland and Cricket Ireland, there's another four for Ireland. Now Balbirnie sweeping the ball down towards us now. He's playing really well. He's moved into the 60s. Fantastic. Yeah, the ground conditions here are great. Usually they play in Malahide, as Alan Cawley would know. But it takes them a lot of money to put the stadium up like that. And as we know, there's been financial difficulties in Cricket Ireland. But so they come to the smaller ground here in Clontarf. We're bathed in sunshine, with a small stand away to our left-hand side. And a great atmosphere here as well, because there's a good Pakistani contingent in. Can Ireland pull off this victory here in the first game of three? Well, time will tell. But at the moment, they're going well. They're 141 for three. We're in the 16th over now.
Thanks for that, John. It sounds absolutely fabulous out there, Al. There's nothing better now than watching a match of any kind when the weather's nice, is there?
Yeah, of any kind, but strangely enough, and people might not notice, but cricket is a really good social sport. Yeah. For if you get the conditions like that, Marie, because you can just kick back, just chill out, a few drinks.
You won't miss anything too major. Yeah,
Because I've been to many games in Malahide, as John said, and it's a really good day out, yeah. Whether it's one day or a test or whatever the case may be. So yeah, mark me down as a cricket fan as well, Marie.
Right, you can add that to your list that you can be an expert on when the time
no
comes.
No expert now, but a fan.
Okay, we're going to go and look at the weekend's hurling now. The really big one is, of course, Cork and Limerick in Porky Cueve tomorrow. Owen Larkin, Tipperary legend, joins us on the line now. How are you, Owen?
How are you, Marie?
Yeah, good. Still trying to come to terms with the fact that we're in the middle of May and by tomorrow evening Cork could have exited the Championship. Hard to believe.
It is hard to believe, all right, but we're getting to that stage of the year and the sun is coming out and everyone's enjoying the Championship hurling.
I was just corrected there. I called you a Tipperary legend instead of Kilkenny. That's from on to two Johnnies now and been all about the Tip. I don't like calling anyone from Tipperary legend, so we'll go back to Kilkenny legend. Let's talk about this game, though, and the focus is very much on Cork and what they can do, and you nearly forget that they're welcoming the All-Ireland champions because we're so focused on their performance and what they need to do, but just how difficult is the task that is facing Cork?
Oh, look, it's a huge task. I suppose Limerick haven't been standard bearers over the past 4 or 5 years, 6 or 7 even. But it's a huge task, and I think it just makes that game a little bit more tasty. That, you know, if Cork lose, they could be out of the Championship. So they're going to have to throw all their big guns at it, certainly, and they're going to have to produce, I suppose, a performance that they haven't produced in the last couple of years to try and be in with a chance.
Yeah, they're probably going to have to just dig so deep. You think of great games in Porky Cueve, full house, sun shining. It could be this fairy tale, but just given the depth, the strength and depth and everything that Limerick bring, and the fact that it feels like, even though we're only getting started, that they're improving every week on.
Your Casey Bell, unfortunately, would be a huge loss to him. He was hurling some of his best stuff up to now, and he'll be a huge loss. But look, I always say it, like, Cork really have the hurlers to, mm-hmm. you know, to do great things and probably win all Ireland. So just I think they just lack that mentality, maybe. But look, they are capable of upsetting Limerick, and if any team can do it, I think probably Cork are one of those teams. So it's there, you know, they're going to have to draw on everything, history, the whole lot, mm-hmm. and bring it to Porky Cueve, and they're going to need a mammoth kind of performance to overcome Limerick. But look, as I said, they are capable of it. It's just whether they can get out on the night.
When you consider the teams that you were on own and how mentality was something that you'd always associate with the great Kilkenny teams, can you put that into people, or are you just, you're born with that kind of that tough mental attitude on the pitch?
No, you can develop it, certainly. I think you can develop it. It has to be there, you know, in a smaller piece, and you can develop it then if you really want to. But look, over the last couple of years, we've seen Cork, you know, that they've had great games, great performances, and then the next day when you really expect them to kind of kick on, they just don't do it. And look, who's to say tomorrow evening won't be the same? They won't produce a brilliant performance and maybe, you know, build on it from there. But look, over the last couple of years, we've been kind of left wondering what's really in the tank with Cork. Like I said, they've produced brilliant performances and haven't backed it up, but they certainly need a very good performance tomorrow night.
We know they can score. You mentioned the forwards. They've scored 449, but they've conceded 551 in those two games. Do you think that they can shore up that back line, that they can get their defenders, their backs, to stop that Limerick attack?
It's hard to see, Marie, because over the last probably maybe 10 years, they've been struggling for a full back. And
since the Rock?
Since the Rock. They haven't really replaced them, to be fair. They've tried a couple of lads there, and, you know, they've worked for one or two games, and then it goes back to kind of square one. But, like, it's a problem. It's really an Achilles heel. It's like, for all intents and purposes, Kilkenny centre-back, we haven't found one, you know, since maybe Brian Hogan, but they have tried a couple of people there, and it just hasn't. Like I said, it's worked for a couple of games, and then they've gone back to, you know, conceding big heavy scores. So certainly, whoever's playing there tomorrow night, I haven't seen the team, but whoever's playing there tomorrow night are going to have their hands full, and they're going to have to come out on top of their marker if they're to have any chance against Limerick.
I find that mad that they don't look at the underage setups that they have and try and develop more backs, more full backs, centre backs, wing backs, whatever it is. And even for Kilkenny, that they don't isolate someone at a young age and say, right, we need to start bringing through a few people in specialised positions.
Yeah, it's hard to do, Marie, because like you want to train at the younger lads kind of develop as they go on, and some lads underage would be great backs and they become good forwards and vice versa. So it's hard to kind of nail down. And then other lads, you know, they play a different kind of a game underage, probably brilliant centre backs underage, and then once it comes to senior level, it's a different kettle of fish, and you know they're not up to it maybe or something like that. Yeah. So it's hard to kind of bring them through like that, but certainly, you know, Cork are struggling for the last number of years. Yeah. You think that they're kind of be looking at that kind of area and going with the underage structures and seeing, you know, who has the qualities to be a good full back and could we kind of mould them into one and try and get them through. And look, the same can be said for Kilkenny as well for a centre back. I think we've had good centre backs. Richard Reid plays centre back with the Shamrocks and does it very well, but it's a different kind of a system that they play, and you know that system kind of doesn't float at inter-county level, and that's why he struggles so bad maybe at centre back. Well, not struggles so bad, but that's why we can't, you know, get over the line when it comes to Limerick.
Yeah, because when you look at rugby, they'd often be isolating, looking for second rows or props. Now, I know they're looking for certain physiques, but like it's talent development, really, and recognising it and trying to bring them through. But obviously, they're professional athletes, so it's very different and more challenging when you're dealing with amateurs. So just then, the game itself, like what way do you see it unfolding, given that there's so much at stake for Cork?
Oh, look, I think it's hard to imagine anything but Cork coming out of the blocks. You know, they need a good start. They need to get Limerick on the back foot, and if they don't, I think they're in trouble. So I'd imagine Cork will go on from the very start, try and build up a lead, and maybe just try and hang on towards the end. They don't have the panel that Limerick have, and Limerick will be looking for impact from the bench. So I'd imagine they'll go on from the start and might be just hanging on to it at the end. But look, if they can get a good enough start and get a bit of a lead built up, they might be just able to hang on to it with a good performance as well.
Yeah, well, they'll know from looking at Clare that you need to hang on to it for right until the end. Because if you let them in at all, you're in trouble.
Oh, look, this Limerick team and panel, you know, they've been in tight situations before, and they're just able to stay calm and stay to the process. And like I said, the subs that they bring on, they make an impact, you know what I mean, and that's what you want from a great team. That the subs are, you know, they're disappointed they're not starting, but they're ready to come on and make an impact when called upon.
So we're always talking about Munster hurling and how great it is, and usually we have Shane McGrath on here, and he would be favouring Munster hurling. But Leinster took flight last weekend as well. Some really good games on Dublin and Antrim, probably. Maybe before the Wexford resurgence against Dublin, maybe wouldn't have seen how important this game is, but it's a big one for both teams.
It's a huge game for both teams. You know, like Antrim will be fighting to nail this. I know they're away from home, but they'll take huge confidence from the game against Wexford, and they'll have a right crack at this. Now it's a game to nothing for them. You know, there's no pressure on them. All the pressure is on Dublin, and you know, Antrim can just have a crack at. Dublin, on the other hand, will need to win it, you know, to stay in with a shout. And, you know, like I said, they're at home. All the pressure is heaped on them now with Antrim after beating Wexford. So they'll need to come out on top. And it's going to be, I think it'll be, if Antrim really bring it, I think it'll be a good game. Antrim has some really nice hurlers. They're ferocious on the breaking ball and in the rucks. And Dublin will need to be at their best to beat them. I've watched Antrim a couple of times this year now, and you know, barring the one against Kilkenny, I think that was just a freak maybe, but they were certainly brilliant against Wexford and thoroughly deserved their victory. So it'll be an interesting one now to see how it pans out.
Yeah, it will, and it feels though with Parnell Park that Dublin will, they like playing there, don't they, Owen?
They do, they like being at home and they like getting the crowd behind them. But look, no, different to Cork, Dublin could come out with some some delays and then kind of let you down as well. So, like, they are a bit fragile, and if Antrim can take any confidence going down to Parnell Park, that's it. You know, if they really go on, Dublin can be a bit fragile. So, I'm sure Antrim will be coming down all guns blazing to try and get those, more importantly, 2 points.
What will Kilkenny be hoping to achieve now against Carlow?
Oh, sure, look, 2 points, I suppose, is what they want. Look, I know the team is named earlier on. I don't expect that team to be playing or to start. There's a few injuries. Richard Reid picked up a knock, and I don't think he's recovered, and I don't think any of the rest of them, bar maybe Owen Murphy, will be chanced on Saturday evening. But look, Kenny, I think Kenny always had the mentality of just going down and taking care of business, and I think that's what they'll do. They won't chance anyone, that's not 100%, but I still think they'll have enough. Albeit Carlo have been doing well, they were unlucky against Dublin, you know, a square ball landed into the net, maybe if they hadn't the win, they might have took the 2 points. And they were really competitive against Galway for long periods, only with about 10 minutes to go, Galway kind of pulled away. So with a bit more belief, they probably could have hung in there for longer. And I think they recognise now they're in with a chance of competing in this competition. So I'd say, you know, they'll be it's a shot to nothing for Carlo as well. Nobody expects them to do anything. All the pressure is on Kilkenny, and I think they'll have a right crack at it.
Okay, Owen, thank you very much for that. Appreciate you taking the call. Hurling in the sunshine as well will be pretty lovely this weekend. We'll talk to you again soon. We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us, though. Brendan Devaney is going to join us to look ahead to another big weekend in Gaelic football.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I mentioned that I would bring you some news from the Diamond League in Doha. Well, Sarah Healy was running in the 1500 metres and she has finished 10th in a time of 4:05.72. Andrew Coscrum went in the 1500 metres and he finished 7th, 3:34.25. That was the season's best for Coscrum. And Sarah Lavin just crossed the line in the 100 metre hurdles in 4th place in a season's best of 12.73 seconds. So well done to all of them. Now it is time to bring on Brendan Devaney to talk about this weekend's Gaelic football. How are you, Brendan?
How could you not be in that glorious fight? getting ready for another Ulster title, you know?
Oh, fight and talk. I like it. Before we get on to that, though, I was just reading there before I pulled up the line there about Roy Began and Mark Jackson. They have secured tryouts now this weekend for Began, the Carolina Panthers, and Mark Jackson is going to try out with the Pittsburgh Steelers. How cool is that to be heading off doing that, Brendan?
Hey, it's unreal, Maria.
Isn't it?
See, from Began's perspective, all that he's done for Monaghan and all the games that he's played, it's not as if he's going away as a young man. And to get this opportunity, particularly like at this stage, you'd be thinking, what a change, what an experience. And I'll tell you what a lot of dollars to be taken home as well. The mortgage would be covered after that.
It really would, yeah. For a couple of seasons there, I think the...
What's the realistic chance of him actually getting signed here? I don't know anything about the NFL.
So Charlie Smith, who's a down goalkeeper, he signed a 3-year deal to join the New Orleans Saints, and then the rugby player from Wales, Louis Rees-Sammet, he also signed with the Kansas City Chiefs as a running back. So they'll get training contracts, which are like $200,000 a year. Okay. So even if you don't even make, if you just make the roster, like you don't even make the match squad, you're still coming home with $200,000 a year. So like, I think Mark was, or Charlie's a teacher. So like, it's just a...
But Began has only been signed as the kicker.
Well, like that's where he'll be. But like, if he does get signed...
Because he's unreal at the kicks, isn't he, Brendan?
Hey, listen, Alan, you know yourself, goalkeepers, you just leave that stuff to them boys. So the fact now they're coming out the pitch now, all of a sudden they're starting to take over the Gaelic game in terms of being number one. If you look at it now as well in the football, the keeper in terms of playing has become huge. It's funny that both games, Alan, have kind of evolved that way. And when you're hearing them big contracts, I know it's a while since you've got one, but that was in the round your kind of money, I think.
Don't tell everyone, Brendan. Don't tell everyone.
I know you paid all your tax.
It's funny you say that with the goalkeepers nearly taking over, and I've seen a couple of people mention that, and they do play such a prominent role, but it reminds me of Scholes' comments there a couple of weeks back about fullbacks coming in play midfield.
Oh, yeah,
he says, if I seen a fullback in beside me, I know what I'm telling them.
And he'd be right. Somebody needs to Trent Alexander-Arnold to get back in front. So that's amazing, and I'd love to see every single person that gives that a go to be signed, because even just being in and around the environment, it's just absolutely class, and it just shows that if you're kicking from a very young age, like you're, and develop the skills, that you do have these other opportunities to go and be a professional athlete. But for the non-professional athletes, there'll be loads of them in action this weekend, because we have lots of Gaelic football, from provincial finals to the Tailteann Cup. But the big one is Armagh and Donegal in Clonus at 4 o'clock on Sunday. What's the mood like around Donegal? How excited are the people up there, Brendan?
Oh, yes. Listen, we really, Jim, I suppose, just brought that thing back after the turmoil of last year. There's such a buzz behind the team, and straight away there's this huge lift and everybody's buying into it. All the players are there. I was just actually up in Newry earlier today at a luncheon for Armagh. So I'm doing both sides, mate. I'm trying to find out what's happening over there. Dara Maloney actually was down at it. Not your own Dara. He was chairing it. So we had a bit of a talk up there. And listen, the mood is unreal, and obviously huge buzz. You know, Armagh, you know, we know about their support. So we've been rummaging, we've been getting on the Donegal crew to make sure we at least match it, because I remember the last game we played them in Clonus in 2022, we were well outnumbered, but I think it should be a more of 50-50 on Sunday, and we're looking forward to an intriguing game. Might be a bit slow to get going, Marie. I think all the action might be in the second half, a bit like Tyrone and Donegal. I don't know if it'll be a classic, but it'll certainly be tense and tight.
Brendan, tell me this. Jim McGuinness fascinates me, right? And I want to sit down someday and have a chat with him, and I will. If he's listening, I will. But what is it, considering he's been out of the game for so long, and obviously he was involved with the coaching stuff in terms of the soccer as well, but literally to come straight back in and transform the county in the way that he has done again, what is the magic or the aura that he has, Brendan?
Yeah, I think it's multi-layered, I suppose. And if you get talking to him, I did interview him at the start of the season. Like, and he is so deep a thinker, and he's so passionate about it. And I think, you know, Donegal was still, you know, in the round, the best team in Ulster when he was away. I think last year probably there was a huge drop, and I think that's why people are maybe looking at it now. There's still good players there. There's 8 or 9 players there of Ulster medals, you know. So it wasn't as if, like, the team he took before, which he really took from a very, very low ebb and took them the Ulster winners first year and All-Ireland winners. But if you look at his record, and this is his 5th Ulster Championship, he's won every game apart from one final against Monaghan in 2013. So that's 5 Ulsters. I mean, know how competitive Ulster is, and he comes back in this year, Donegal with a very tough task to even get there, playing Derry away. And then Tyrone won both games, played very well against Derry, not so much against Tyrone, but that's how you want to win a semi-final. And I think in many ways, Armagh the same, coming in, maybe not playing that well against a very, you know, defensively set up down team. So both teams just about getting across the line in the semi-final. Such a hard game to call. I think 15-on-15, you'd have to say Donegal probably have a slight edge, and in the 2 games they played, the draw, they probably should have won the game in Armagh. They won the league final. But if you look at it, you know, Patton's back as well, which gives, I think, that starting team maybe an edge over Armagh. But I think in terms of the bench, you know, the subs come on the last day. It was none of Armagh's starting forward scored, but yet Oisin O'Neill came on, and you have the likes of Jarlath Oak to come on as well. And, you know, you have Turbot, you have players that'll come on that'll make a difference off the bench. So I think Armagh have the stronger bench certainly getting into this game.
It's 2008 when Armagh last won a provincial title. I know, like, we shouldn't talk about hunger in GAA because it's a bit of a cliche, but, like, are they going to want it more, do you think?
Yeah, you would think, Marie. Now, there is obviously that pressure of the Armagh not getting across the line in big, big games, you know. Obviously, last year's game, you know, on penalties. So there is a lot of pressure attached to this side. Now, they'll be breaking it down. You have a huge management team in the background there as well, in terms of McKeever and in terms of Donny coming in and Conleith Gilligan coming in this year. So I think Armagh, probably with Rian O'Neill out there, they have the armory to put the ball in direct, and they have probably a height advantage over Donegal. And that's a massive thing if they were to go long. You know, I think the midfield out there with the likes of Creeley as well, they have big men, but I think Donegal with the likes of Langan and McGee out there, or Maxett, McGonigal coming in as well. So I think there's probably an element there, Armagh, where they could go long and hurt Donegal inside. But I think both teams will play it pretty cagey. And I think that's why, you know, you'll look at it, it'll get into that really stomach churning like it was against Tyrone. That real tight second half, you know, which is which really comes down to the small margins. You know, you've obviously a brilliant place ball kicker in Rian O'Neill that's starting to really hit form. So that's very dangerous for Donegal as well. And there's loads of battles in there as well. You know, you think of the likes of Burns taking up Oisin Gallon, and you think probably McElroy come out and take Ryan McHugh, you know, Connolly and Mark Kern, you know, Thompson Magan. So there's loads of battles happening in there. But really, and going back to, I suppose, the point Alan's talking about, it's all about team shape, and it's all about getting in, being hard, being difficult to break down, and then trying to break into space. And Donegal have a flood of players that are playing brilliant at that, you know. The O'Donnells are flying, you know, Darrell Boyle, Ryan McHugh, you know, they're all coming from deep, Patter Mogan. So I think that's the weary on the Armagh side in terms of stopping those deep runners coming, because I think that's where one of Donegal's biggest strengths lie. As I say, off the bench, you know, sorry, I mentioned Turbo there. It's obviously Jason Duffy and Nugent and Oisin O'Neill, the last day, the players that come on to contribute to Armagh. So if the game's in the balance, Armagh certainly have more dangerous players to finish the game. As I say, just from the starting 15, you'd probably give Donegal a slight edge for what takes the pitch.
Alan, it sounds like it'll be the opposite to Bayer Leverkusen last night, where they're actually going to be trying not to lose the game as opposed to going out and trying to win it.
Yeah, and hopefully that's not the case. I'd love to see the fact that obviously they go out and take each other on, but we know that's not the case in Ulster. Now, in the early game against Derry, that was the case. The two of them went at it, and it was a brilliant spectacle. Are you expecting that, Brendan?
Yeah, well, that goes back to tactics, and I think, you know, Derry were playing what you call a modern game, and Jim very much took it. That's a game you play at Croke Park to beat Dublin, and that's what it did. But you had to reset and remember what you're coming up against. And of course, the Lynch and the Horace show and Patton's kickouts and his ability. And I mean, sure, some of the Americans might be looking at him. I hope they keep off him for a while yet. But, you know, he's got that kick as well. It's just unbelievable. And so, you know, you watch how much Tyrone backed off. And even though it was Mulroney, wasn't it? They were still set for that tight game. And they were pointed up by Donegal getting into the closing stages. And, you know, maybe a couple of errors went for a strike. You know, McKiernan in the left, you thought they could have kept the ball, maybe tried to pull Donegal out. So composure is the key there. And that's why, even though Armagh 2022 really went after Donegal and strangled them a bit, I think this is a more composed Donegal team. So if you go after a team and they get out, you're exposed. So the whole thing is, it's that kind of bravery. Are you brave enough to go and play up the pitch, and then, and how many players you commit to that? And I think in that is the key. It comes down to the brilliance end, and there's so many top players on the pitch. So I think McGinley will be guarded about going after Donegal too much. I think we'll see times when they do it, but he'll drop back as well. And I think for Jim, particularly in Clonus here, and for this first year he's back, you know, you'll see a similar pattern to what we did in those other games. But listen, it's got us through Derry. It just got us through Tyrone. You would think, listen, it's all about winning up in Clonus. Donegal will play a similar tactic again because it served them well so far.
What are going to be the key matchups, do you think, Brendan?
Yeah, I was saying Rian O'Neill, probably Michael Langan is an interesting one because both players want to play. And Langan, I think, is top quality. I think there's probably more in him from what we've seen. Do you want to put a marker on Rian O'Neill? It's very interesting because you're on about players who can ping those balls inside, the likes of Turbot and to the likes of Mernon. He's one of the players can do that. So Donegal can't allow him to be on the back of the move. You know, other players just can't deliver that type of ball. So do they concede somebody and put them on him? It's a difficult job because do they follow him all the way and then do they step off? You know, as I say, probably McElroy, Goody, Ryan McHugh, you know, the likes of Connolly will go, Connolly and Colonel match up in the Donegal defence as well. So their key battles, you know, Creeley against Jason McGee. I think Jason McGee's probably been Donegal's best player over the two games, and he had 3 points there the last day as well. So he's a player that Armagh have to keep an eye on. I just think there's so many players in the Donegal team that's going to score a point or 2 points. And if you're looking at me, you're probably looking to get something about 16 points or probably win you this match. So, you know, neither team's conceding goals. So if one was to conjure up a goal, it's obviously going to be a massive score. But, you know, that mightn't happen. I think both teams will be very restricted to trying to stop goals for definite. So it'll come down to, you know, something like a 16, 15-point game. And, yeah, as I say, it'll be desperately tense. And listen, I'm not looking forward to the final months. You wouldn't rule out a job. Listen, you wouldn't even rule out penalties again.
Anything could happen. What about Dublin and Louth? Dublin going for their 14th Leinster title in a row. It's sports. It's hard to say anything is predetermined, but can you see this being anything but a Dublin win?
Yeah, that's it, Marie. I mean, 5-21 last year they had against Louth, and you're just looking at saying, right, looking at actually the previous game, they hit 5-21 against Louth in the Championship. I was like, how bloody weird is that? But, you know, look at that, very weird. 10 goals over two games. I mean, there's your starting point for Jared Brennan. He's obviously an ex-Dub, knows the game inside out. And listen, I think he's a brilliant up-and-coming coach. I watched them that day. They came and played Donegal. They played very defensively. He knows how to set teams up. And I think he's really taken up from where Hart and his progression with Louth. And I think they were far too open last year. So the key is, first of all, stop goals. And then it's about, you know, that breaking out. Keep the ball out long. Kick it out. Try and get in behind the Dublin press. And when the likes of Early and Dernan out there, I mean, you've got big men. And then when you break forward, there's so much talent inside. You know, Mulroy and Keenan and these guys, you know, Byrne. They can do you damage. No, the last five times they've played Dublin, they haven't scored a goal. So I think a goal would be a massive score. You know, and I was just thinking about Cusick Park last week. You know, the toss of a coin. If they had a toss for this and took them up to Drogheda, would we have a better spectacle? I certainly think we'd have a more interesting game. You just look at Croke Park, James McCarthy back the last day. You know, Dublin are just, they are who they are. How do you stop them? Where do you stop them? You know, if you put out a fire here, it jumps up here. So listen, Louth will come out of a lot of credit here, mate, if they can patch up that huge score that they conceded last year. If they can, a bit like Clare, if they can stay within 5 or 6 points, I think that's serious progression for them. It's so hard to make a case for them actually winning the game, but they're at full strength. You know, Casey Burns back from as well. So I say, I'm hoping that, you know, they sit tight, and when they break, then, as I say, Keenan, Burns, Mulroy, these guys can cause problems inside, and if they can grasp onto something. And we just want to see a game in there, because the Dublin dominance, hard to see it stopping just currently. And really, Marie, it's hard to see it stopping anytime soon. But Louth are certainly, for me, the second best team in Leinster. And so they're the best team to be there to challenge for the Delaney Cup.
I think they'll do well, Marie. I don't think it'll be a 5-21 scoreline that we've seen before. But I think regardless of what happens, Brendan, I think Gerard Brennan will come out with a lot of credit for what he's done so far since he's gone in. And who knows, a future potential manager, when you think of the career that he's had with Dublin, and obviously he's going about it now in terms of the management.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, obviously Val Andrews has been down there, Mickey Whelan has been down there. So I think what you're looking at with this brilliant Dublin team now is there's going to be so many people with unbelievable. I mean, James McCarthy goes back 9-time All-Ireland winner. I mean, that's so weird to say that. There he is coming back in. So, you know, you've got so much experience. So the counties that are within striking distance of Dublin may as well make use of all that experience and all that learning. People have played under people like Jim Gavin. You may as well take in that experience and try and learn from them. Louth had a very tough league, obviously. You know, they finished sixth, but they were competitive and unlucky in a lot of games. So they're certainly building towards something. But yeah, I think you're right. You can tell that Jared Brennan is a very modern, forward-thinking coach. All you can ask for is he gets the best out of the players. And when you see that happening as a supporter, you know, when you go and try and compete, that's all you can ask for. After that, you're playing against a side like Dublin, you know, in Croke Park. It's such a difficult ask to win the game. So you're looking at other factors in it, you know, that you can progress the team and then look into the rest of the championship.
Okay, so Brendan, will you be a happy man on Sunday night?
Yeah, listen, Marie, I'm always happy back. Yeah. It's life goes on, you know. I'll have things to do. Working from 5 Monday morning, the 4 kids and
kids. Oh wow! Yeah.
Look after the good lady.
Full of energy. Come on, Brendan.
Fair play, Brendan.
They're well warned to be quiet, Marie. When we're, there's only time they're quiet. I give them ice creams each. So they be quiet now.
You have fatherhood nails there, Brendan. Thank you so much. I will talk to you again next week. We're going to cross back over to Clontarf to a sun-soaked John Kenny, who was watching Ireland and Pakistan. And John, it's all over now.
Sensational news. Ireland have beaten Pakistan by 5 wickets in the end, and they had only one ball to spare, beating Pakistan to take a 1-0 lead in the 3-match series. It really was a fantastic contest. Pakistan batted first, they made 183. Ireland chased them down, though, a magnificent 77 from the captain Andy Balbirnie, a 36 as well from Harry Tector, and they also chipped in with a 24 from just 11 deliveries from George Dockrell to get them close to the line. Gareth Delaney and Curtis Camfer were the two last men in for Ireland. Delaney made 10. Curtis Camfer, cheetle flip over his shoulder, his first ball when he came in. Also got a 4 in the last over, and then they scampered that one with one ball to spare. A terrific victory. Ireland haven't played them since the T20 World Cup, and that's quite a while ago, and it's a brilliant win for Ireland in this, the T20 World Cup year. They've beaten Pakistan here in a sunny Clontarf. Game two on Sunday. Ireland have taken a 1-0 lead in the series. Bring that one on.
Brilliant, John. Thank you so much for that update. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us. Alan Colley is hanging around to talk football for a goal. Brennan will also join us. And of course, we will, as we always do on a Friday, have Jane Mangan on racing.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It's time to look ahead to this weekend's Premier League action, starting tomorrow with Fulham and Man City. Alan Colley is with me. Fergal Brennan is on the line. The title race is nearly over, Alan, or is it over already?
Marie, I've been saying this for the last probably 3 or 4 weeks, that there will be a twist. I'm convinced there'll be a twist. But as the weeks are trickling by and we're down to the last two now, I'm not sure where this twist is coming. Irene, last week I said it could be Wolves. Obviously, I was very, very wrong. They dismantled Wolves. Just think, half 12 on a Saturday morning, Fulham. Fulham are one of those teams. Obviously, they're comfortable. They're safe in the league. But they're one of those teams that you don't really know what you're going to get out of them sometimes. And they can turn it on because they have some very talented players and very good players and have a good manager. I'm just hoping for the good of the title race that to turn it on tomorrow, Marie, because as I said, I do think there's going to be a twist somewhere, but as we're trickling down the games and now there's only three left for City, maybe the one during the week, Spurs away from home, and considering the run of form that Spurs are on at the moment, that could be good for Arsenal in the sense that for the first time all season, Postecoglou has come under some heat and a bit of pressure and a bit of stick and criticism, and they will have to show a reaction because they've been so poor in their last couple of games. So that could be good that we see a twist there maybe, and Spurs might get a result. So I'm hoping over the next two games, Marie, that we do see some sort of a twist.
Fergal Brennan, do you think there's going to be a twist? Can Fulham deliver it for us?
I'd agree with Alan. Everyone's hoping for a twist. It's just very difficult to look at the matches that we're seeing in front of us and find a kind of an argument to make it. Fulham, since they've been declared as safe, they've really dropped off. I think they've won 1 in 7. They're not in the position to challenge for Europe. They're just kind of drifting towards the end of the campaign. Spurs.
But you may as well elaborate now, Fergal, on how much they're drifting towards the end of the season and what they're at today in their training grounds.
Well, the kind of traditionalists over the professionalism of Premier League football will be very, very angry to hear this. There was a video on social media this morning from, I think it was a couple of the Wolves players that posted on Instagram, of them flying kites after training. Marco Silva had kind of cut training short to let them have a bit of downtime and a bit of fun. I don't dig too deep into it, that, you know, they should be running laps and doing press ups and practicing corners. But I think it does certainly feed into the narrative. Guardiola and Arteta were both asked about their views on kite flying in their press conferences. and both of them kind of made light of it, of like, oh, you know, whatever, team bonding. You can kind of see the fire behind Arteta's eyes when he's like, kites. Kites. But I just think, given the position that they're in, kites or no kites, it's difficult to make too much of a case for them to get a result. I would agree with Alan that they are a team that I've enjoyed watching in patches this season. I think they've got some very good players. I think Marco Silva kind of flies under the radar, but about how good of a manager he is. It's just Manchester City, the position that they've been in so many times in previous campaigns, where you've thought, oh, you know, this might be a situation where someone can stick a leg out and they just nick a goal and they sit in and City find it hard to break them down. I'm getting harder and harder to see that sort of situation. And in terms of Spurs, they were my pick for the top four. I thought they would come back from the fixture break that they had and come strong. They've lost three in a row. They look quite ragged. Regardless of Aston Villa going out of Europe last night, they now look like, short of something ridiculous happening in the next week or so, they're going to get Champions League football for the first time. And over the balance of the season, I think that will be fair for them. When they've needed to pick up results, they've done it. And Tottenham, you know, there's lots of reasons for it. They have run out of steam and they've not won the games that they've needed to keep themselves in that position. Man City don't need to go to Fulham and win by 4 or 5 goals. They just need to win and get themselves through, get themselves to the Tottenham game in midweek. And then we see where we are next weekend. But I just don't see it at the moment. I really don't.
Al?
Well, it is. It's hard to make a case because of the opposition that they're playing. Of course it is.
But it's like Dublin and Louth. We were talking about 5 minutes ago.
I don't think it's that much of a gap, I have to say, Marie. I really don't. I think Spurs...
Well, I didn't think so until I saw them flying kites today. I was like, they're done.
No, well, the kites thing, to be fair, and normally I'd be very critical of some of the things modern professional footballers get up to, but I certainly think the kites thing wouldn't really bother me because it's the day before the game. It probably needs to be put in some context. I haven't seen the video myself, but if they're training done, as Fergal says, it's not like they're out drinking in the pub the night before a match or something. something. So I wouldn't read too much into that. But just in terms of, I suppose, the quality that they do possess, Munoz has had a decent season, particularly towards the end. Villian, obviously, can cause teams a lot of problems. So they can cause problems. And I definitely think Spurs can cause Man City problems too. It's just the run of form that they're on. But I definitely think there's something in the fact that Postecoglou has for the first time all season, everybody's been lapping him up. The last three or four weeks has been a shambles. And in terms of the criticism that he's facing, and you could see how annoyed he was against Chelsea when he was obviously roaring and barking onto the pitch. We hadn't seen that all season from the fact that they're at home as well against Man City. They'll have to show their fans, because he'll want to end the season on the high that obviously the season has gone from. So I do think you could get, we're making the case for them and it could happen. It's just that Man City obviously are so good.
Yeah, they're so good and they've so much depth. What about Man United and Arsenal on Sunday, 4:30? That is kickoff there. Could Man United
No.
Okay, Alan, I don't even need to ask the question. They wouldn't be able to get one over on Arsenal, you don't think?
I just think Man United are shambles, and they have been all year, we know that. Mm-hmm. And just not even in terms of their approach and their attitude and their mentality. If you actually look at the football side of things, the amount of times they get carved open, shots on goal, attempts on goal, all the things, all the stats, all the numbers that we look at, it's just hard to see anything other than Arsenal win. Arsenal have been unbelievable. To be my team of the season, I think Arsenal have been absolutely brilliant. I know I tipped them at the start, but regardless of winning the league, to go toe-to-toe like they have and learn from their mistakes from last year and strengthen and improve on what they did last year, I think Arteta deserves an enormous amount of credit. And I think they'll continue to run a form until the end of the season with the wins. They're just praying for a slip-up by Man City.
Fergal, we know that Arteta has broken through those mental barriers of beating the likes of Man City and Liverpool, but he's only got one win from three as manager at Old Trafford. Is there still something there?
I think it will be difficult for them this weekend, and I take on board what Alan has said about United being quite easy to play through, and the fact that it is a bit of a pantomime at the moment, and there's obviously going to be changes this summer, and the potential that the manager is out of a job. But I keep thinking back to the Liverpool games over the last few weeks against United, the league game and the cup game, where I do still think United have an ability to go, we're just going to lie down here and make it so difficult for you to score goals, to create chances and to hurt us. And if we nick something, if we nick a goal, if we nick a result, great, because we know we're in big trouble. We know that there's massive problems running all the way through the team and the club. That, for me, could be an issue for Arsenal. I think the only difference between Arsenal as they are now and the two Liverpool performances against United is that Arsenal are creating chances for fun, and they've got a bit more of a plan B and a plan C in terms of the set pieces, that they can get a goal. If United do make it difficult for them, they can swing a corner in, they can swing a free kick in, and someone can score, and they can get out of Old Trafford with a 1-0.
I would take that to a point, but if you think of those Liverpool games as well, they shot themselves in the foot. Liverpool had ample amount of chances, opportunities, carved them open at will. It was just that United were lucky, and they are capable of scoring themselves. I definitely give you that. But this Arsenal team will tear them to shreds, I think.
I think they will win. I don't think it'll be a kind of Sunday stroll. I think it'll be tight, because this is the first time, I think, in maybe three, maybe even 4 weeks, that Arsenal are playing after City. City, the likelihood is they beat Fulham, they go top. They've only been top, I think, for 6 days in 2024, or certainly from a small window. It's a different type of scenario for Arteta and his players to deal with. They've dealt with this situation before this season, but their level of experience of dealing with it is lower than others. I do think they'll get through. I do think they'll win. But United, this is their final home game of the season, I think. I'd have to double check. I'm not too sure on that. Oh, it's one of their final home games of the season.
No, they're home Wednesday night. Newcastle Wednesday night.
Newcastle, sorry, yeah. They know they have to just show the fans something. There's big problems, and Erik ten Hag knows that he's hanging on to his job. They need to have something to hold on to build into that FA Cup final as well at the end of the month. So I'm certainly tipping Arsenal to win, but I do think it could be quite tight for me.
Okay, look, hopefully we'll have something to talk about on Monday anyway, and there'll be some sort
of 4-0 Arsenal win
drama
and a 1-1 Fulham.
Fergal, thank you as always for that. Alan, bit of League of Ireland tonight as well.
Talca Park, yes, Marie, Shelburne. I'll tape the other match, so I'll get to see two of them. But Shamrock Rovers and Pats is on the telly. Big one, obviously. Pats lost their manager during the week, so it'll be interesting to see how they react. And Shamrock Rovers themselves suffered a poor defeat at home to Waterford, so they'll have to react. But Shelburne and Drogheda is the game I'll be at tonight, Marie, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's still so early, but yet it is it is quite interesting, just given the lack of consistency from everybody, really, Alex.
Yeah, that's like, I'm trying to work it all out, Marie, really, and it's been difficult this year, I have to say, because the research and the facts and the stats and all the things you look into, they're just been so inconsistent, the teams. It's unbelievable, really. Now, I think Galway and Waterford have certainly added to the division in terms of their competitiveness, because obviously they're full-time as well, which helps, but you're looking at some of the top teams, really, in terms of Shamrock Rovers, Derry, Shelburne are up there. But even Shelburne themselves, who got off to such a brilliant start, won 6 of their first 7. I wasn't expecting them to maintain that form. But their form since, Marie, is only 1 win, I think, in the last 7. So a lot of draws, like, and they're still top, which goes to show, when you think of the run of form that they've been on in the last 7, yet they're still top. So it just goes to show the inconsistencies of the other teams. You're just expecting the Shamrock Rovers to click into gear and blow them all away. That still hasn't happened, but I still feel that's what's going to happen, because they're getting players back. Jack is coming back now. Ferrugia came on last week as well against Bohemians, but they've been very inconsistent themselves, and Stephen Bradley is probably scratching his head as to why.
Yeah.
Okay. But I still think they'll win the league.
Okay, Al, speaking of consistency, let's go to Jane Mangan, who always consistently performs on this programme. How are you, Jane?
Well, guys, I'm not flying any kites, but I'm hopefully steer you in the right direction.
I heard, Jane, after Spillane Tower last week, you were flying more than kites now around Cork.
Yeah, I think we established, when Hugh Cahill asked me what I got up to the night after Lancer won, that we established that I am the boring member of the Mangan family, and I'm quite happy to wear that tag.
You're the consistent member. We'll go with that, Jane. This weekend, French Guineas weekend, exciting one for Aidan O'Brien.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we're into the stage now where we're having Derby trials, Oaks trials. We had the Newmarket Guineas last weekend, and then all eyes turned to Paris this weekend. And there is plenty of Irish representation. There has been 13 of them declared for the Colts race, the French 2000 Guineas. Aidan has a pair of them, with Christophe Soumillon declared on Diego Velasquez with his first string. Henry Longfellow, the choice of Ryan Moore, of course, a Group 1 winning juvenile from last year. So he'll be, I think they have a serious chance of getting in the money here. Of course, Aidan won this race in 2021 with St. Mark's Basilica, and I'm not getting the vibes from France that they're terribly confident in their home team. One of the results of the weekend would be if Willie McCreary and Billy Lee could land the French 1000 Guineas, and they have a great chance with a mare called Vesper Tilio, who was Group 2 winner last year. Not guaranteed to get the mile distance, but if she's ever going to get it, she's going to get it in France, where they often sprint. There's a full field of 15 for this race, and Aidan sends over Content. But for whatever reason, it's notable that in the fillies race, we Irish have a very poor record. And in fact, the only British winner in recent years was in 2018 with Tapal, which for David Sincox filly. So maybe we have a better chance in the Colts race. But I hope for Al Sharira Farms, Willie McCreary, Billy Lee, that Vesper Tilio can run a big race in Paris. But there's also plenty of domestic action. Killarney kicks off their 3-day festival down there on Sunday with a jump card. There's a flat card on Sunday in Leopardstown, Naas and Cork. Stage cards tomorrow, but I'm going to turn my attention to the Lingfield Derby and Oaks trials, because again, this time of year, we're looking to find and unearth the next stars. Aidan O'Brien sends Illinois across for the Derby trial that he won with Anthony Van Dyke before he went on to Epsom Glory. He also saddles the Euphrates, but Aidan had a number of runners at Chester today, no luck, but he's had good fortune over the last couple of days. There's a colt in there called Salamanca in the Colts race that I think could run a big race at big odds, because he should have won the last day under Holly Doyle at Newmarket. He pulled too hard. If Ross O'Ryan, the Galway jockey, can settle Salamanca, I think he could run a big race in the Derby trial. And as for the Oaks trial, Jonathan Thady Gosden won this particular Oaks trial with Annapurna a couple of years ago. We know what she did under Frankie Dettori when she went to Epsom. This time around, they saddle Danielle. Danielle is a homebred of Anthony Oppenheimer's, and she looks to have a big reputation after winning her maiden by 12 lengths. Aidan saddles Rubies Are Red in here, and the King and Queen are represented by a filly called Treasure. Imagine the royal family naming a filly Treasure. So maybe she's good as well. But yeah, I think this weekend, as much as I love the jumps, I have given myself permission to now accept that it's a flat time of year.
Okay, well, you got to do these things, Jane. Thank you so much, as always. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the sunshine. That is all from us this evening. Stay tuned, though. Blana Tracy and the Official Chart Show are up next. RTE.
2FM.